KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Hey, before we jump into a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, I want to call your attention to the KLYT website, as I often do, and maybe nothing super specific on the website, although there's a lot of great information even on the homepage. You know, often you'll be listening to the station, and I really enjoyed that teaching or that song. Now, the song, not so much you'll find on the website, most of what we do is long-form Bible teaching and public policy issues type programming. And if you're hearing something, and I don't know what I was listening to, go to the website. Go to klyt.fm under schedule. You'll find our schedule there. And if you're still not finding what you need, just shoot us an email. You can contact us through the website, or just address correspondence to studio@klyt.fm. The other thing on the website I want to call your attention to is the organizations page, which you'll find the Rio Grande Foundation there. Go to klyt.fm, click on organizations, you know, and you maybe either need assistance with something, or you know someone who does, or maybe you're just looking for a great organization to come alongside financially, prayerfully, with words of encouragement or volunteer time. We've posted a bunch of organizations on our webpage, and we're just going to keep adding to it. But just some great resources there I want to call your attention to. We really do our best to serve you, the community here in New Mexico. Another organization that does that is the Rio Grande Foundation. President Paul Gessing in studio with us. Paul, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, good to be with you, Steve.
How are things all Rio Grande Foundation?
You know, summertime normally is a little more chill, shall we say, but there's no chill this summer for us at the Rio Grande Foundation, especially at the city of Albuquerque. There's been a lot of important issues, and we've got one coming up on Monday evening as well. But just had an issue where they went and raised the minimum wage. We didn't even know that was on the agenda when we talked a month ago, but they fast-tracked that thing. And ultimately, the good news is, small good news, they didn't phase in the $12 to $15 increase starting in 2027. It'll phase in over 3 years. So rather than hitting everybody with a higher minimum wage next January, or this coming January, going from $12 to $15 an hour, we'll go $1 in 2027, $1 in 2028, and $1 in 2029. So 3 year phase in, a little more palatable. Still frustrating because this is something that we could have avoided with better outcomes in November in the city municipal elections.
Yeah, and the math is pretty simple. In your comments, you said, everyone will be, it's a negative thing. And for those that are listening and saying, well, I have young people that will, whatever. Remember, that they, the people that are getting paid at this minimum wage, that means the employer is set, to have to spend more for the help that they're getting, which, over time, increases the minimum wage. I know I started either at $2.85 or $3.35 an hour. However, it's not something that has to be happening. If you look, Paul, you can articulate this better than I can, but, if you look to Texas, where their minimum wage is much lower and the economy is much better, it's just not something that is going to necessarily improve things like some may think without thinking.
Yeah, well, a study out of California from the University of California, Santa Cruz, found that businesses in that state where they raised the fast food minimum wage to $20 an hour. Now, $20 is higher than $15, but California is a much more expensive place to live and do business. So you can kind of translate what happened there. But generally speaking, raising the minimum wage has the same basic impacts across state and even international boundaries. So what happened in California, though? Increased automation, prices went up, and fewer employees were hired. That is not rocket science. It's very basic, and it's the way things work typically. When you artificially create what's called a price floor just says you can't sell something for lower than whatever the government arbitrarily comes up with in terms of the cost. So it's unfortunate. You know, the council moved significantly to the left this last election. And so now we're going to see about this minimum wage, or tax increase that's going to be voted on Monday. So I encourage folks to go to cabq.gov and send an email to their counselors saying, don't do this. Now, this particular plan, we defeated something very similar. It's a nearly half cent increase in the gross receipts tax. It would take us here locally from 7.625 up over 8% on the GRT. It's way more money than we need. The real reason for this is Councilor Brooke Besson, who represents parts of the Northeast Heights, has a swimming pool that's under construction in her district. The price of that swimming pool has dramatically increased, and it's now $70 million.
Up from, I think that's important.
Up from $17 million. So you're talking about a massive increase
price. How do you misbid that poorly? And I don't think you do, quite honestly. I think, like you say in the article, I think you did, should even be maybe considered illegal.
Yeah. Well, it's the North Domingo Baca Aquatic Center. It did get some bells and whistles added in, but that's a lot of bells and whistles to go from $17 to $70 million. Now, even with that, there's only $36 million needed to finish construction on this thing.
But yeah, so why, huh? Yeah.
Is making some political calculations, and she's saying, well, how else can we spend all this money at the city of Albuquerque if we raise taxes? Because the tax increase would generate an additional $113 million every single year. And it's not a temporary thing. This isn't going to go away. So you need $36 million. You raise the tax $113 million, but that's every year, and that'll go up, of course. And it strikes me as absurd and economically very harmful to do something where you're giving government quite a bit more money than they really need to finish the project. Now, we can talk about the project and why it's not necessary, shouldn't have been see those cost overruns, why there should be protections and those kinds of contracts, etc. But that's kind of beside the point at this time.
Well, listen, you did give a call to action to go to cabq.gov and register to be at the meeting on Monday. Let me also give you this, okay? The article that Paul wrote and we're talking about is on errorsofenchantment.com. Albuquerque City Council eyes big tax hike to pay for over-budget swimming pool. Vote Monday night. If you go to that article, Paul has provided the link in case you forget where to go do that to be part of this. But you need to sign up by this afternoon. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah, about 5 p.m. is the time that you want to sign up for. And you can sign up. I mean, look, I am thrilled if everybody listening to this show goes and just sends an email to their counselors.
Yeah.
That's a starting point.
Okay.
If you are willing to spend a few hours, you can go to city council. Now, there's two ways to do that. You sign up either way this afternoon, approximately 5 p.m. But you can sign up for general comment, which will get you out of there in an hour and a half, 2 hours. Because general comment, it is limited to 30 people, but you can move out of the meeting quicker if you have other things to do, which who doesn't, right? Or if you're the most dedicated of the dedicated, you can stick around and talk specifically on that issue when it comes up for a vote during the meeting, which is normally after a couple of hours in. So there's multiple ways to do this, and we appreciate everybody who's willing to engage in whatever way, shape, or form they can. Now, this tax increase would go on the ballot in November, so it's not a yes or no final decision. And I understand that some people say, well, there's nothing wrong with voting on it. And I get that. Voting on it is better than the alternative. But there's a lot of great issues and policies that I would like to see addressed at City Council that they have no inclination of letting us vote on.
Yeah.
Like dealing with the homeless population and crime and whether we're actually going to crack down on some of those things or not. But
well, then even with the vote, Paul, you and I were talking off the air about the anemic turnout for the primary. No, let's not count on it getting on a ballot and voting on it. Let's address it right now while we have an opportunity in City Council. And you provided the information for that in the article at errorsofenchantment.com. Any more on that, Paul?
Nope, that's great.
Okay. Hey, we have time before break. Let's move on. You and I, more than once, several times, education is part of what we talk about, and the rating that is done annually and where New Mexico falls in that compared to the rest of the states, and that is at the bottom of the stack. And I'm looking forward to getting into this, Paul, because, you don't blow the party horn here, celebrating that we've moved from 50th to 49th, which I greatly appreciate. I'll tell you, when I saw the headline, New Mexico rises slightly to 49th in annual kids count report, my first reaction was, well, I would like to see us rise much higher than that, but that is in the right direction, and you can't turn a ship on a dime. You know, sometimes it's a slow turn, but there's plenty of reasons to not be okay with 49th.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the Annie E. Casey Foundation's annual Kids Count report. Again, it's not the report the Rio Grande Foundation would do, but it is a well-written report, and it highlights issues relating to the quality of life for children in the state of New Mexico along four major indices: economic well-being, education, health, and what they call family and community, which is probably a very big deal, especially here at Calvary. But overall, let's just say that New Mexico is not doing great. It's slightly better, arguably, than last year. But we beat out Mississippi this year, which is actually kind of strange to me. So,
because their education had improved.
Right. So in New Mexico, we rated 47th on economic, 50th on education, 41st on health, and 50th on family and community. Mississippi, which theoretically ranked below us, according to the authors of the report, was 49th in economy, 16th on education, 50th in health, and 49th on family and community. Now, that education number, we've talked about the so-called Mississippi miracle and the way that they have improved education outcomes. I don't know about you, but when you have one big area, and education is huge. I mean, we all know that for a lot of young people, education is the key to making a better life for themselves. And you've not just moved up a little bit, but you have sustained a long trajectory upward in terms of positive outcomes. I think that is notable and puts Mississippi in a different category than New Mexico, which, quite frankly, it's not just that our number's not very good and our best numbers on health at 41, but we're not seeing any sustained progress in any of our four issue areas, whereas Mississippi is definitely seeing that in education. So I actually take issue with the idea that we've moved up even one slot simply because Mississippi is so is such a example of what you can do with positive policy changes in the education system. And of course, we all know kids don't necessarily benefit from a better education right away. It takes some time. You know, generally speaking, they graduate and they have some skills and knowledge, and then they get out into the workforce. But that takes, you know, that takes time. That takes 10, 15 years to really see those results start to impact society in a more broad way. So I'm interested to see how Mississippi evolves in terms of other results, not just on this report, but other reports, due to their revolutionary changes in education. But unfortunately, the word in New Mexico is kind of status quo, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, watch Mississippi. And, you know, they got waterfront property. So, you know, we'll see.
I'd still rather live here than in Mississippi based on the humidity and the heat that they get.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're up against the break, but I do want to invite you to stay with us through the break. We have more to talk about. And Paul Getzing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is going to be with us for the full hour. We'll catch more when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, we are in that that space and time between Mother's Day and Father's Day. And our friends at Family Life Radio put together an ultimate baby shower for Care and Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque, and we wholeheartedly are supporting that. Together, we would like to see our listening audience support the people at CareNet Pregnancy Centers, more importantly, their clients, the families that are caught in a crisis pregnancy and need these donations. And there's item-specific lists that are available to you. And you can do the shopping online to provide for CareNet, or there's drop-off locations. Find all of that information by going to klyt.fm in the Action Center and just click on the Ultimate Baby Shower 2026. And that's through Father's Day. Now, listen. The Ultimate Baby Shower is Mother's Day through Father's Day. That does not mean they don't need stuff throughout the rest of the year. CareNetABQ.org, you can always find ways to support the work that they're doing here in Albuquerque and five different locations around the Albuquerque area, including the medical mobile unit. All right, Paul Getzing in studio with us for the full hour today. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation and a contributor to Errors of Enchantment, from which we're getting our topics for today's conversation. And Tipping Point NM, Paul, how are things with the podcast, and what's coming up? What can people find?
Yeah, well, we've got this coming, well, actually, today, now that I think about it, Mackenzie Bishop. He is a home builder here locally with a company called Abrazo Homes that he owns with his business partner. And we've heard and talked about the housing crisis and the affordability crisis, and we're talking in this show at tippingpointsnm.com about that issue and other issues relating to housing affordability here in Bernalillo County, Albuquerque area, but also across the state, in different ways that government either has or is influencing the cost of the house or apartment that we live in, and often, unfortunately, driving that price tag up.
All right. Well, tippingpointnm.com. You can go check that out and find past broadcasts and keep up with all things Rio Grande Foundation and topics important to you and your family at the website. So, Paul, you know, education I mentioned in the last segment. Another topic that regularly comes up in our conversations is New Mexico's oil and gas. And you know, because you know, when the gas prices go up, I guess it correlates, right? That New Mexico would experience more money, and that has happened. But as much as we would hope to have, you know, the benefit of that as citizens of the state, we're really not seeing it.
Yeah. So. With the war in Iran, and I don't think I need to tell anybody out there that prices have gone up at the pump. You see them whenever you go fill up, and that has an impact on not just your bottom line, which of course That's the most important thing directly, but also the price of everything else that you buy goes up, and we've seen inflation rise in recent months as well. But according to the Legislative Finance Committee up there in Santa Fe, Ishmael Torres says the average household in New Mexico is paying $750 more every month to cover the costs of groceries and gas due to higher prices.
Now, Paul, more compared to what it was last year? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, since before the war began, which
okay.
I guess you could...
You know, that's about last year.
Yeah. But yeah. $850 million has flowed into the state of New Mexico because we are the second leading producer of oil and gas in the country. When the price goes up, our state embraces more money. The money flows into the coffers. And, you know, in a, I would call it healthy and sane state, which I don't think we necessarily live in, we would see part of that return to us, either through one-time rebates or perhaps, you know, because we've seen a longer term.
Are you going to say reduced taxes?
I know, reduced taxes, yeah. Because this is not a new thing. Yes, this particular increase is new, but the overall price barrel of oil production has gone up so much that the state of New Mexico is really swimming in money, and we've talked about that fairly extensively. But especially at a time when New Mexicans are dealing with such increased prices throughout the economy. But unfortunately, I think Representative Michaela Cadena from Mesilla, that's down in Las Cruces area, she said to Channel 13, that I put the story in the article, that heiresofenchantment.com. She says, I hope we hold the purpose of those funds very close to heart and make sure when money comes to our coffers, the state, we spend it and spend it well, which means that don't expect any of that money flowing directly to you. But
yeah.
If you're...
I'm pretty confident I can count on them spending it. I'm just not, I think, as confident. Spend it well is an important part of that.
Yeah, we've seen massive spending growth over the time that Governor Lujan Grisham has been in office. And I wouldn't say we have a lot as a state to show for that money. And I mean, we're talking massive amounts of money. The state budget's increased 75% under the current governor. The permanent funds is well over $70 billion at this point. And it's hard to really point to increased outcomes. We just talked about children. We just talked about the kids count report that has us really buried way at the bottom in that. So I think we should try something different, which is to empower families, preferably through lower taxes across the board. But I would settle for one-time rebates, especially given the fact that we don't know how long this situation in Iran is going to go on. The president said numerous times that an end is in sight, that an agreement's going to happen, and that has not happened, to say the least. But maybe this time will be different, and we'll finally see an end to this unfortunate war.
Yeah, Paul, as far as the that $850 million, you know, the state is seeing because of the increased cost of gas and oil, and, you know, the legislature being quick and ready to spend it, hopefully well. Is there a New Mexico Doge?
No, there was actually an attempt to do a New Mexico Doge. It was introduced at the end of the 2025 legislative session. So this year would have been the 2026. We're talking about the 60-day session.
I can almost hear the legislature in unison, no.
Well, the bill to create that was introduced by Senator Jay Block of Rio Rancho, and I provided expert witness testimony on that particular bill. It was really, at the end of the session, we knew it wasn't going to go anywhere, but the idea of some kind of effort to rein in waste and fraud and abuse in the state of New Mexico
right.
needs to be undertaken, but really, it hasn't been in any sustainable way.
Yeah, you don't get the change you don't ask for.
Exactly.
Right? All right. We have more. We have some time before our next break. Our outgoing governor is very proud of numbers that are showing up, and you had some thoughts on this in an article at Errors of Enchantment, the headline being, MLG is proud of this?
Correct, yes.
What say you?
Well, first and foremost, the governor put out a tweet. I call them tweets still, even though it's now X. But
and I know what you mean, too, Paul.
Yeah. She put one of those things out saying that New Mexico had improved from 40th to 20th in the area of higher education. So my first question was, what the heck does that mean? Because the governor and several politicians, but especially this governor, has a tendency to put some data that looks favorable to her out on social media without any citation, without any details on where the information came from. So I put into the Google machine, I said, New Mexico, highest 20th in higher education, and where's this coming from, essentially? And it turns out it's from a U.S. News and World Reports report. But the governor conveniently ignored some other data points that don't fit so well with her narrative.
It's called spin doctrine.
You are correct. So starting with U.S. News and World Reports, one of their best known reports is their best state overall report. We're 47th in that. We're 50th in education, which if we're doing so great on higher education, you'd think maybe our K-12 and the whole education system would see some boosts in terms of outcomes, but we're 50th. The thing that really shows me the failure of the policy, the free college policy, which has driven that outcome. So you make college free, and suddenly you're going to see an improvement in an index like the U.S. News and World Report.
You've got the air quotes on free.
Well, right, free. people can't see them on the radio, but yes, free, paid for by we the people and oil and gas as well. But the kicker to me is number 49th rated in a four-year graduation rate for college. That hits the nail on the head right there. 49th is not good, obviously. So a lot of young people in New Mexico are getting free college, not necessarily so that they can actually graduate with a usable diploma down the road, but many of them, I would say a lot of them, are struggling in college because they were not adequately prepared by the K-12 system. And so, at best, I guess they're learning some basic skills that they didn't learn in, you know, high school. But when you're spending all this money, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars annually for free college, and so few of your people are graduating, those half degrees are, nobody asked for that. Nobody says, well, an employer is not going to ask you, gee, well, did you do 12 credit hours in college? How'd you do for half a semester or half a year? That is not of interest. It's you either have a diploma, you stuck it out, or you didn't. And unfortunately, this is the reality of the situation. So,
well, yeah, and as far as opportunity, I mean, this is equivalent to throwing kids in deep water without teaching them to swim, and pointing to the goal on the other side of the water and watching them drown and fail because they weren't prepared for the opportunity that's being given.
Right. And I've said from day one that rather than adding a new entitlement for free college, we need to focus as a state, this governor especially, on making our K-12 system work, which gets back to the Kids Count Report in Mississippi and all of those outcomes that are driven by a strong K-12 system.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing we can take away from that is that Mississippi has shown us a way to actually make reform happen at the state level. And that's big, especially given the fact that Mississippi suffers from many of the same socioeconomic challenges we do. So they were able to do it. We should be able to do it, but we're not.
Yeah, well, and if we as a state looked at all of these issues with, you know, whether education or any of the issues we brought up today, even election of our legislators, if we would look at all of these things through a biblical worldview lens, I am sure we would see a better outcome in all of it. That brings us back to keeping the main thing. And yes, we are going to talk about public issues, public policy on a Christian radio station. But I also want to make sure that we're all reminded that biblical worldview means so much when it comes to these issues and how we handle them. And I am confident also in saying we're seeing how their hand, you know, how well it goes when they are not considered through a biblical worldview lens. Whether it's on that last article or anything else before we go to the break, Paul, anything else?
No, I just echo what you just said.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we're going to come back. More to talk about. And, you know, there's always a reason to be positive. We'll find one somewhere in the show.
Sorry.
As we laugh so as not to cry sometimes, too. But listen, looking forward to bringing you more information that you need to know. We'll get to it with the president from Rio Grande Foundation, Paul Gesing, after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned the Ultimate Baby Shower. You can find out more about that at klyt.fm in the Action Center. And I also mentioned part of that, you can do shopping online for CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque or pick up something and go to the drop-off spots. Well, there's a couple of events coming up at the end of the week I want to let you know about. One of them is at CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque. They're doing an open house at their main office in Albuquerque, 3701 Paseo del Norte. And that's actually on the it's on the frontage road for Paseo, west of Jefferson on the Paseo del Norte frontage road. But just look up CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque at 3701 Paseo. You'll find it with the help from your whatever map you use to get you there. That is this Friday starting at 4:30. And if you bring one of those baby shower gifts, they'll actually give you a raffle ticket. Now, that's not really the reason to go and do it and help them. But hey, you get a raffle ticket. Good time to drop off one of those gifts. Details at karenetabq.org/donate. And then I wanted to let you know about this free event at it's actually out in the East Mountains. East Mountain Vineyard Church in Edgewood is hosting the Noah Webster College free seminar this Friday evening at 7 o'clock. The topic is, how did America become an exceptional nation? It's presented by John Kinzer, Noah Webster College Associate Professor of History. There'll be refreshments and a Q&A to follow. That's happening this Friday night as well. Full hour today with the president of Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org, Paul Gesing in studio. And Paul, let's move on to another article you wrote at errorsofenchantment.com. Actually just yesterday I was visiting with Carla Sontag from the New Mexico Business Coalition. More Better Together New Mexico talk, I think, yesterday. But we were talking about a project that's meeting some resistance in the North Valley that had a footprint of, I want to say, 45,000 square feet, mm-hmm. Which is important to that neighborhood. I understand the concerns they have. There's another one that potentially is coming to the west side that would dwarf that. Now, it's not right in the midst of commerce. It's kind of out in the boonies. However, there's plenty of reasons to take a real close look at potentially what may be happening on the west side with a solar project.
Yeah, well, let's unpack this thing a little bit. So there's numerous problems and concerns that we have with this whole thing. First and foremost, what we're talking about is it's between 1,600 and 2,000 acre solar farm on a site planned for around Interstate 40 and Atrisco Vista. That is You'd call that the extreme west side of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with Atrisco Vista, it used to have a different name. And it's now where you go to get to Amazon's warehouse facility, Tempur-Pedic,
yeah.
A lot of different facilities out there. And
it's
a double legal airport.
If you take that road that goes behind the volcanoes and head south
correct.
From Paseo, it's kind of where you kind of end up out there.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this project is a significant, I said 1,600 to 2,000 acres. I went ahead and looked, and I was like, 1,600 and 2,000 acres. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's about 2.5 to 3 square miles of footprint here for this solar farm, because these solar farms take a lot of land up. Now, there's environmental questions to be had about that, but I have an even bigger question, which is, that is an area that is growing in Albuquerque. We don't have a lot of land. I mentioned our podcast guest on Tipping Point, New Mexico, a home builder, Mackenzie Bishop, trying to build houses. Well, within the kind of existing footprint of Albuquerque, there's not a whole lot of land available, because we've got tribal land to the north, we've got mountains to the east, we've got Air Force Base and labs to the south. So the west side of Albuquerque, you know, you do have the volcanoes and the petroglyphs, but ultimately there's a lot of development that is going on out there on the West Mesa. But this would take up a significant plot of land right along I-40, which is a very significant interstate. You generally want to have a little bit more economically dynamic activity right near an interstate, because people can get on that road and go wherever they need to go, and that's very attractive. Solar panels and farms should be built away from average people because that land's less valuable. So that's one component. Then we are talking about, this is through Bernalillo County Commission. Now, this is not a done deal yet. I am trying to work to find out more information from one of our county commissioners. I won't name him, but this is a $1.2 billion tax abatement known as an industrial revenue bond that the county is offering to this, or considering offering to this facility. So what is an industrial revenue bond? It means that you don't pay taxes on the construction costs, property taxes moving forward, and a lot of the other expenses that you would see from somebody building a big project like this. And we can debate and discuss, and actually we will in a minute, because the next thing I want to talk about is a report on these issues. But anytime the government provides these one-off tax incentives, it does shift some burden onto the rest of us. Now, I want smaller government. I would want across-the-board tax cuts and tax reductions. But the way we tend to do things here in New Mexico is, we're going to give you a one-off tax credit or exemption or an IRB to do what we want you to do. And I think that's a real problem. So this is all of this is being done for a project that will create just 6 full-time jobs. And PNM, Public Service Company of New Mexico, the utility that all of us here in Albuquerque get our power from, unless you're off the grid or whatever, but PNM is already identified as the main buyer for this, because under state law, they are required to be increasing their solar and wind components of their portfolio of generating electricity, because we have a state law in place called the Energy Transition Act that forces all that. So we're talking about subsidizing somebody out of a different pot of money in order to build a project that's kind of required anyway. And that's another problem I have with this whole thing, is I'm against subsidies as a general rule, but if we're going to do them, they should be transparent and easy to understand. But, you know, we're essentially hiding the ball. It's like one of those shell games, literally, that you go to, like an isotopes game, and then they whip it around really fast, and you never know where that, you hope to find out, and you don't win anything, but you get to have the pride of picking the shell that it was under, the baseball or whatever. And that's the problem with these things, is that the politicians love to try to hide the ball, because other people would want subsidies or lower taxes or some kind of benefit when they do something, but they don't get it because that's unfortunately not the way it works here.
Well, I thought of something that isn't addressed here. Now, it might double the jobs, actually, for this project. But I asked, Copilot gave me the answer to my question. Mm-hmm. Here's the answer. A solar farm does require a significant amount of copper, mm-hmm. which leads to the need in a miles-long project several security people to be out there guarding the place because rest assured because this radio ministry at a time had equipment not far from this location, and often we would go once a year or more, mm-hmm. go off the air because of copper thieves. And I think that would be something they would probably have to, anyway, small thing would maybe double the amount of, and that's still not enough, even if you had 12 or 15 people. And that's only one of the problems to address for this potential solar farm. But just thought you'd appreciate that, Paul.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine that probably an advocate for this project would say, well, we're kind of off the beaten path, although being closer to the interstate does raise the opportunity for
quick
people
getaway.
To get there. But on the flip side, there's no buses that go out there, to my knowledge.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's that. But copper's an interesting thing because we don't mine a lot of these things. We do have mines across the country, but we are not rapidly increasing the amount of mining that is done in the United States for products things like copper, which are in high demand because of these kinds of massive projects.
Yeah. So
that is another issue. There's, of course, you're covering large tracts of the desert, you're disturbing it, you're making it unattractive for wildlife and for animals that would otherwise be there. There's the heat that reflects and often kills birds from solar panels as well. So there is no such thing, as I have said 1,000 times, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Every policy, every source of energy has its pluses and minuses. And solar has a lot of negatives that are not considered. That being said, even if you support solar, if you're the strongest supporter of solar, there are serious concerns about why the project, why in the location that we're talking about it, et cetera.
Yeah. All right. Full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We got a couple more things to let you know about, including an LFC tax expenditure report that Paul wrote on at arizonaenchantment.com, and an event coming up with Rio Grande Foundation you don't want to miss. We'll talk about all of it when we wrap it up after this on ABQ Connect.
To ABQ Connect.
Hey, have you put it on your calendar yet? Freedom Celebration is coming Saturday, June 27th to Bloom Fiesta Park. It's a free event. There is $10 for parking, so you'll want to load up the cars and head out for Freedom Celebration. It's going to be a great time of not only music, but a lot of family fun. Even before the music starts on the stage, there's a car show, there's an extreme sports demonstration, the kids fun zone, food trucks, and it's Bloom Fiesta Park. Chance to get out and let the kids run around, and then of course when the action takes to stage, there's going to be plenty of music, nationally known, internationally known artists, including local artists as well from Citizen Worship, and then the Palaus, who incidentally will have events, one for women on Thursday, and the men have an event on Friday, I believe. Those details all along with Freedom Celebration at lovenm.org. Andrew Palau will join people on stage. We'll interview them about the ministry that they're doing, and really the whole thought behind things like Freedom Celebration, where the body of Christ comes together to create these events to draw people to the good news of the gospel. But it, of course, wraps up with a fantastic message from Skip Heitzig, and then fireworks to follow to wrap up the evening. So Freedom Celebration, put it on your calendar for June 27th, and then the preceding nights, the Palau's have events. We've got them at lovenm.org for you to go check out. And Paul Gessing in studio with us, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, wrapping up our time looking at various articles and content he's provided for errorsofenchantment.com. And as I mentioned going into the break, LFC tax expenditure report. Paul, I don't think I've ever walked through one of these. And you obviously took some time to look closely. What did you find?
Well, to my knowledge, it's the first of its kind published by the Legislative Finance Committee. And just to reiterate something I talk about pretty regularly, the LFC, as it's known, is essentially an internal think tank that works through the legislature.
Unelected.
They are not elected. No, they're paid professionals by the legislature to try to look at some of the issues that I think help formulate policy in Santa Fe in the legislature. Now, my biggest complaint is not that the LFC doesn't do a good job typically, and I have some thoughts on this report that they just came out, but that the legislature tends to ignore what they have to say, just like they ignore a lot of good advice that people have for them on a lot of policy issues.
They should listen to our show.
They should. Now, this report, which came out, it's May 2026 is the date, so very recently, it looks at what they call tax expenditures. So a tax expenditure is, imagine an economy where government controls everything. And then in a true kind of sense of the word, a tax expenditure would be anything that the government doesn't collect. So I don't care for the term tax expenditure because I don't believe that that's the right way to look at the economy. But that's a term that's in use in economics, etc. What would be a true tax expenditure? Now you can say, well, any tax cut, any reduction in a tax is a tax expenditure. But what they really focus on here are a lot of the things we talk about, economic development incentives, everything from the film incentives at the state level to a lot of ways that the state tries to mitigate against the impact of the gross receipts tax, because the gross receipts tax is a all-encompassing tax. And then over time, the legislature, for reasons some good, some bad, has chipped away at the way a true GRT would work. For example, under a true gross receipts tax, your income would be taxed. Well, we have, as a state, created a income tax to tax your income separate from the gross receipts tax. And then there's business inputs. Bill Richardson famously eliminated the grocery tax. Well, that's also a tax expenditure. All right, so we understand that. That's kind of understanding tax expenditures. So they did this report, and basically they said the state of New Mexico is spending a half billion dollars every year. And I said, well, first and foremost, letting people hold on to more of their money is not spending. Spending is spending. Film subsidies are spending. Something called LEDA, Local Economic Development Act, it's a prominent economic development tool where we hand checks to various businesses to start. That is a tax. But a lot of things, tax breaks, one-off reductions in the gross receipts tax, those are not spending. They are taxes that could be collected that are foregone. So that's one thing I said, because if you talk about tax expenditures as the Legislative Finance Committee does, you kind of get the impression that government has a plenary right to all the resources in our society. So I like to stay away from that. But then they talk about the efficacy or lack thereof, and they do say that these tax incentives are not very effective. And I agree with them. And that points to what I've wanted and the Rio Grande Foundation's wanted, and a lot of people will say that we need is real tax reform, tax reduction, tax limits that will return money to the people of New Mexico, and that will grow the economy. So rather than some narrowly focused, maybe a short-term tax credit for a certain kind of business that you're trying to attract, reduce the corporate income tax, reduce the personal income tax, change the gross receipts tax, make that more less impactful on businesses and people, whether it's reforming or reducing the rate. So those are a couple of the big things that I highlight about this report that I think the LFC does a lot of great work, but I have some concerns and questions about why they focused on it in this direction on these tax expenditures.
So the woulda, coulda, shoulda numbers shouldn't count, shouldn't be included.
Yeah, I don't think you should rightfully focus so much of the revenue that we get as well. Anything less than that is some kind of subsidy or spending. It's not spending. It's letting people keep their own money.
All right. Hey, before we wrap up here, and Paul, we got a short time, but make sure you let people know about this event.
Exactly. We are hosting author Timothy Sandifer as part of our America 250 celebration. This latest luncheon is at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center on June 25th. So just a few weeks from now, 2 weeks actually.
And you have this on Rio Grande.
And it's at riograndefoundation.org/events. He's writing about Jefferson, Adams, and the Declaration of Independence.
Some of the founding principles of our nation.
Exactly. So check it out.
A great opportunity and another great event from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. Tickets are available now.
Exactly.
And the Indian Cultural Center, one thing I can tell you, every time I've been out there, great food.
They do have great food there.
All right. Paul, thanks. Let's do this again next month.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.